Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Are you ready for us?
I am starting. The recording has started, so I'm going to go ahead and do roll call.
All right, please do.
Okay. All right. Chair Stipo.
I'm here.
Vice Chair Becky Quintero.
Present.
Commissioner Robin McArdle.
I'm here. I apologize for being late.
Thank you, Robin. Okay, we may proceed.
All right. Thank you. We'll go to the approval of the minutes of the March 27th meeting. Any questions? Yes, ma'am.
I'll make a motion to approve it.
Thank you. It's been moved. And do we have a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve the minutes of the March 27th meeting. Any further discussion? All those in favor, please say aye or raise your hand so they can see you on screen.
Aye.
There we go. All right. Any opposed? All right. Moving right along. Number three, call to the audience. At this time, any member of the public is allowed to address the committee. Speakers are limited to three-minute presentations. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meetings Law, individual committee members may ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda or respond to criticism made by speakers. However, the committee may not discuss or take legal action on matters raised during call to the audience. Diana, you said previously that you had not received any requests to speak. Is that still true? You're on mute again.
That is correct.
That is correct. All right. Did we have anybody who wanted to turn in one of those slips? Not seeing anybody moving toward the slips. Let's go on to item number four, which is the Park Ranger Program. All right.
Good afternoon, everyone. Can everybody hear me online okay? Yes? Okay. My name is Chad Kasmar. You're not so new chief of police. I'm on the backside of 3 years at this point, almost 5 years with the city of Tucson. And that does not include my 4 years that I started working for the city as, through, Parks and Rec as a lifeguard and water safety instructor through college. So I'm a diehard Parks fan, as Larry knows. And, I'm honored to be here today to talk a little bit about Chief Magnus's Park Ranger program that launched on December 18th of 2018 and kind of the evolution of that program. So just a high level recap, Chief Magnus's, and I know a little bit about this, of course, because I was a deputy chief, the second in command at the time. The focus was to improve public safety, specifically parks, quality of life issues and the challenges that we had faced even back then. The goal was two-person community service officer teams that we would call park rangers for a total of 10, which would cover our four divisions, plus two additional on the downtown district. Back then, we had a total at that time of 47 community service officers, and we were looking to increase that count by 10 for a total of 57 community service officers. That was all focused on supporting larger goals within Plan Tucson Goal 3, Tucson Social Environment Element, Safe Community and Secure Neighborhoods, and Policy PS1, Identify, Implement, and Maintain Standards of High Quality Enforcement and Cost-Effective Law Enforcement Services. So where are we at today? Things look a little bit different today, and I don't think it's any secret to Parks leadership. This has been an ongoing discussion that I've had with Parks leadership since I've been back as chief of police. No excuses, but my it's more of telling the why. There were some challenges with that program and the pilot of that program. Just to remind everybody, community service officers, we hire them at 18 years of age. As a parent of two sons, one who's 20, there's some maturing issues with some of those employees when we get the younger employees. And we had some low-level misconduct, folks not doing what they should. What we learned through that expansion was they needed direct supervision to like most 18-plus-year-olds, not surprising to anybody. When I came back as chief, this was one of the many, many things that I had collaborated with and then was a recipient of when I came back as from the Mercy Communications as an interim director there, was recognizing that the Tucson Police Department had lost about 5% of their staff a year for the previous five years. And it wasn't a sustainable attrition rate. And in 2021, we lost over 100 officers. The call to action that I came up with city leadership was recognizing while we should focus on maintaining the commission resources we had while growing that, it was still a difficult task in a post-George Floyd world where a lot of folks don't want to be commissioned police officers. But what we knew we could scale was a community service officer program. So today we sit with 155 authorized. So again, just a reminder, you had about 57 CSOs at the time in 2018 when the Park Ranger program was piloted. We now have an authorized strength of 157. 31 of those folks are in training, so we have about 125 community service officers. They augment our 850 deployable police officers. So the primary responsibility for community service officers at this point is to support 911 calls for service, and it's our philosophy of putting the right work in the right hands. All that to be said doesn't mean that parks aren't a critical part of safety in our community, and that parks leadership, TPD leadership, and city leadership try to figure out how to have safe environments. I like to look at the challenges that we face around parks are primarily that I receive complaints about and that I get from parks are related to unsheltered population. And criminal damage, safety of employees, vandalism, sleeping after hours, using drugs. We often think it's just fentanyl, but most of our unsheltered population are poly drug users, which means they use methamphetamine and fentanyl. Fentanyl, high level, just kind of over you because I only have 10 minutes to cover all these topics, and I'm available for after, you know, phone calls and conversations after this. Fentanyl has changed the landscape of unsheltered populations throughout this country, and Tucson's no exception. 50% of the fentanyl in this country is seized in the state of Arizona, which translates into our proximity to the border means it's very affordable. I'm talking 30 to 60 cents a pill. So I would imagine park staff, along with my staff, aren't coming across unsheltered folks that are drinking copious amounts of stolen beer, which we used to see, but they're now smoking fentanyl, and they smoke it. So when you see foil and you see blue straws, that is a primary ingestion of the way that they smoke that drug. It's 50% more potent than any kind of synthetic opiate we've seen, and it's super addictive. And so I wish I had an answer for you of what we're going to do about that. That's the primary issue of the drugs that are driving some of the frustrations that we have in this community, including with parks. What I would tell you is the complaints from the business community almost mirror that of parks, consumer of park services, me being one of those. I have children who play youth sports. I'm an avid cyclist. I ride the full loop once a month just for my own fitness, but also to get a feel for what's going on with the shelter population around that route. So what is the solution? Let me give you the bad news first. In my opinion, the Park Ranger program didn't work and it didn't scale for a variety of reasons. And so what we've transitioned into is recognizing the community service officers could have a far more robust role within our community and within the police department. And so the conversation that's been had for almost a year, but came to fruition in the last 2 weeks, through the work of parks leadership, IT, and public safety communications department. And of course, TPD was coming up with something that we call hotspotting, which means that we use evidence-based strategies. We come up with strategies that are defined in evidence, that are tracked with data to see if we're having impact. And we've done that for years. There's science behind it specific to violent crime. We've now transitioned to do that with parks safety deployments. So those are a mix of community service officers and officers who will respond to parks at 6 a.m., 8 a.m., 10 a.m., 12 noon, 2 p.m., 4 p.m., 6 p.m., 8 p.m., and 10 p.m. They will respond, and those are dispatch checkouts. So that means calls will automatically be generated within our 911 center, and officers will be dispatched to those calls so we can track it. We can track how many times they go. We'll be able to track what kind of activity, and we'll certainly be able to mirror how park staff feels about the level. Are they feeling like it's working? Are they feeling like it's not working? But we'll also have data to show what's going on during those times and if we're actually preventing crime. Those deployments will occur on the south side at John F. Kennedy, Ormsby, Mission Manor, and Santa Rita Parks. They will occur at the east side at Udall, Stephen Gallo Park, Lakeside, and I can't read my own handwriting. Better help me out on this one. There's one additional park.
on the east side.
Lincoln.
Starts with a G. I'll come up with it. Give me a minute. West side. What was that? Gurney. Yes.
West side.
Was that west side? Okay, maybe. Sorry, that might not be it. I'll have to go back. Open my email back up on that one. West side, Amphi, Seminole, and De Anza Park. So. These are parks that were collaborated and identified as the primary pain points of where we're getting community complaints, either directly through TBD, through council, or through parks leadership. So what I would ask for is give me a couple months to have these deployments occur, and then we'll be able to come back and provide another update and report to how everybody's feeling about how those are working. So I threw a lot of information at you and happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Chad? The times that you mentioned were from 6 in the morning until 10 at night?
Yes, sir.
Every 2 hours?
Yes, sir.
Basically?
Yes.
Okay. And you said the primary method to get anybody to act on these is to go ahead and call 911.
No, sir. I'm sorry. A more generic term of our public safety communications department. So our 911 center, emergency communication center, will auto-populate those calls. So that was a project that took 4 different departments working together to make that happen. It took a little bit, frankly, longer than it should have, but IT is under resourced just like a lot of other city shops. And so if we want to do these proactive things, sometimes it takes time to just get in queue on when that workload could be completed. I do think this will ultimately provide the best results. I want to take ownership I did co-develop the park ranger program with Chris, and we tried a lot of different things, and some worked and some haven't. And that's kind of the point of innovation. I'm trying to figure out a way to be smart with the resources that I have to support park leadership, and recognizing though that there's bigger solutions also to be had with conversations with mayor and council, the Pima County Attorney's Office, our Housing First program. There's a lot of different things that go into the unsheltered population and the issues. And if you haven't heard me speak in front of council before, I'm an advocate of a continuum of care and also a continuum of accountability. So that means, you know, there are a lot of lawful times where unsheltered population are in the parks, can legally be in the parks, and we don't have the authority to remove them. But when they're smoking fentanyl or they're drinking alcohol or they're in a canopy that's, you know, been rented by someone else, those are certainly things. I am not an advocate, and I'll take sole ownership, so if anybody has any critique or questions of me, of using community service officers in enforcement capacity. And I understand some people might say, well, park staff are civilians too. They are. But an employee in a parks uniform or in our community safety, health, and wellness efforts are not wearing a Tucson Police Department badge and patch and a gun belt and driving a car. Like, we represent authority. And at times that puts my civilian staff in harm's way. And that's why I've been a staunch advocate of not confusing or utilizing community service officers as a primary enforcement mechanism. At the point where, you know, beyond telling somebody you need to leave, you're no longer welcome here, we're going to call 911, which happens probably daily within the park's staff. It's when somebody shows up in a Tucson Police Department uniform and car where then the accountability increases, and that's where there can be more conflict. So I'm sympathetic to the position that the consumers of our city services, our community, who want to use these parks in a safe environment. I'm sympathetic to the park staff who want more support from the police department, and all of the environmental factors that go into genuinely solving the complexities of the issues and why we're having them in Tucson. And I'll tell you, you know, right now it's going to come into, and we're all city directors right now are co-developing a larger homeless strategy on what to do with our unsheltered population. Because while we're breaking down the 100-acre camp in the woods, which you've all been watching on the news, I assure you that we're going to increase pain points in parks and neighborhoods as a byproduct of that effort. So what we're not looking to do is squeeze a balloon and just have the balloon come out between your fingers and above and below. We have to come up with more holistic strategies as a metropolitan government, which includes investment and enforcement to create an environment where it's uniquely Tucson. We're compassionate, but you also can't behave in a way that disrupts other people's lives around you. And you know, That's the sweet spot that we're trying to strive for. I will close on a positive note. Contrary to what you might feel right now with some of the complaints that you get, violent crime and property crime have decreased the last 3 years consistently by single and double digits. And we're confident that we'll continue to do that. So again, what you read and what you see and what you're experiencing doesn't always mirror what the data is showing as well. So that's why you have to mix both.
Now, if there is no violence involved in some problem at the parks, is 311 a better thing to call than 911?
For community 311, I mean, the best avenue is, sure, it's 311. But if there's a parks employee near, I mean, the goal, and this is a work in progress, I don't sit here and claim victory that TPD staff and park staff are firing on all cylinders. They're both really big staffs that cover a large geographic area. So we're consistently pushing our divisional leadership and parks leadership together. These are not always director problems to solve, but making sure that when it's a operations division Midtown park problem, that the Midtown leadership is engaged in solving that problem. So that's not something we're trying to solve at the chief's office, but at a divisional level to have that ownership. But 311 for community is always a great non-emergency place to start with, because if it does become an emergency, they can patch you right over to the 911 system.
Yeah, let me give you an example and let me know if this is handled correctly or not. We have next to Catalina High School pool, there is a playground that actually belongs to TUSD, but the city is responsible for the equipment and everything else there. There have been several times when I've walked over there in the early morning and found homeless people lying on top of the playground equipment so that kids can't use it. Now, if I were a parent and I came over there, I would turn around and leave and probably call 911 or 311, excuse me, now. And that's what I did the last time. Is that the appropriate response, is to call 311 and hope that somebody has some time to get out there and say, you know, you might move along?
311 is a great tool for that. Again, you can go to Tucson Police Department, our main website, and find the list of listings and emails of all of our police leadership. So that'll guide you to the geographic area too. If it's a regular occurrence or regular problem, I would recommend, and it's not an emergency like in this case, it's unfortunate, but I wouldn't classify it as an emergency. Then, you know, it's always best to go direct to TPD leadership that have geographic responsibility in that area. But it can get confusing for community, right? Because they don't know where all the boundaries are of all the different. So 311 can certainly patch through and direct, and they're doing a great job of peeling off those calls. My advice is, if you have time to think of whether it's an emergency or not, start with 311.
Other questions? Yes, Robin.
Yeah, what I think I heard was that there's been an increase. It's actually tripled the number of CSOs, and the biggest issue are drug related, probably behavioral health, and looking at best practices and scientific based evidence. I should probably know this, but I'm wondering what then for behavioral health wise, does training the CSOs include?
So the community service officers get about half the training of a commissioned police officer. What I would tell you is, in a post George Floyd world, or nearly, you know, we're on the backside of a decade since Ferguson, we still give police officers 9 months of training and expect them to do miracles with that 9 months of training with a brain that's not fully developed until they're 25. As a chief, I will tell you, and just so we're clear, this is the 33rd largest city in the country. So this is not just a small old Pueblo town. This is a major city with major city challenges. And we're certainly doing a lot better than a lot of other communities. I don't think even with the amount of training that officers have, it's not enough. And certainly the same can be said for community service officers. They're trained in de-escalation and general mental health disorders, but they're for sure not an expert. And officers and CSOs would only become experts through exposure and on-the-job training and dealing with folks in crisis. So the 911 center right now peels off about 1,000 calls a month of folks who are in crisis that don't warrant sending a police officer or firefighter or community service officer to a call like that, or there's a code response. So I think the growth in the community is recognizing, okay, we're doing the right things. we're seeing property crime sustained drops. We're seeing 5-year sustained drops. We're seeing the same thing with violent crime and gun crime and go down. We still have, let me just be really clear, far too many homicides and non-fatal gun incidents that occur. I have the unfortunate responsibility of prioritizing the work. And, you know, again, the Park Ranger program wasn't at the top, and I had to figure out a way to, how do I cover all the 911 calls that are coming in, which are also decreasing, by the way, which is good. And call response times are also decreasing. So the metrics are good. The space that we're all feeling the pain point on, and which is why the Parks Ranger program is a timely topic, is we're still seeing a lot. We're still seeing an expansion of the unsheltered population. We don't have great numbers. So is it increasing by 10% every year, 30%, 5%? I'm not sure, even though that we do a point in time count that's very accurate, as accurate as I'd like it to be. And it's a difficult moving number to track. I would tell you, I think the problem's getting worse, not better at this point. And so it's still an ongoing dialogue with the city leadership, county leadership, Ms. Lesher, Mr. Ortega, the mayor, about what do we do, you know, and just in a non-finger pointing of if what we're doing is not working, but how do we make changes that give us different results? And the answer isn't everybody going to jail, you know, for narcotics use. We did over 5,000 narcotics arrests last year, and I can't sit here and tell you it had a great impact. Because as I see it, as a consumer of park services and our pathways, I see the problem getting worse, not better.
Okay. So the material.
Wow. Go ahead, Becky.
I just, years ago, when Chief Smith was chief, when I was younger, we had volunteers in prevention, which I was part of. And I don't know if this is still safe, but I'm still going around my neighborhood in the dark and looking at the parks and the streets and all that stuff. So last night when I was checking out the garden, there was somebody in there and it's all locked up. And so I just went ahead and flipped my lights on and off and honked my horn till he jumped out and left. But I had my doors locked, so nobody could jump in my car. So I just, can I still be doing that?
That's a very good question, Becky. You know what my answer is.
Well, I can tell my husband where I was.
You know, I got a little chastised for this the other day. You know, my wife's, I won't say the store, but her primary point of shopping is at 4040 North Oracle. And over the last 2 years on the west side of our operations division Midtown, a lot of the stuff that we shop and buy our groceries and different things is now behind locked cages. And my Home Depot that I shop at Oracle Wetmore is also, you can't buy a tool and you can't go buy wire and you can't do a simple remodeling job without having all these things walked up. And my call to action for the community is I never want anyone to put themselves in harm's way. But I had words with an unsheltered person the other day on my bike because he was acting a little crazy, and then he tried to harass me, wrong person, whether I'm in uniform or not. And I gave him we had a conversation. And I don't want anybody to put anybody in harm's way, but as long as people are allowed to continue to behave, the minority of our population is allowed to behave in a way that impacts everybody else without the rest of the population speaking up and having a voice and saying that it's unacceptable, then we should only expect things to get worse. And I'm not asking anybody to do anything risky or dangerous, but I think having, you know, being intentional, and that's okay that, you know, you could have called 911 or backed out if the individual, I wouldn't have wanted you to go into the park and ask the person to leave.
No, no.
The reality is we have very few assaults or violent crime issues related to the unsheltered population. They're more associated to plight, right? Shoplifting, panhandling problems, criminal damage, trash. All those types of shopping carts in the middle of a bike path on an underpass at dawn, at dusk and dawn, you know, that are going to get people hurt. Those are the kind of things that we're dealing with. But those, most people in our community are not victims of crime and are impacted by those plight related issues. So they're important, you know, as we prioritize violent crime, traffic fatalities, you know, quality of life issues are right up there with that. But I think we all have to have a voice, and we all have to, you know, it's okay for us not to think that it's okay and it has to be acceptable. I hope that answers your question.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
But be safe.
I think that's a good answer. anybody else have anything for Chad? I appreciate you taking the time to let me know. Because, you know, I was all in favor of this program back when it started, because I was here then.
I was too.
And I didn't know what had happened to it, and that's why I asked the question a month or two ago, and I appreciate the info because I thought they were still out there rangering.
You're still going to see the cars. We're still using them. And that does still occur. We are still deploying CSOs in parks. It's just not, it's a much bigger program now. And I can't be limited to just such a granular, when we have so many city challenges. But I will look, I think you have an amazing leadership team. I've worked around a lot of leadership teams. Like I said, I started my journey with the city nearly 30 years ago for working in parks and, the level of dedication and commitment and, you know, Larry keeps me on point too of accountability and if her needs aren't being met, with my team. And we have to have some of those conversations because everybody's running so many different directions, but I'd really love the opportunity to come back in, let's say 90 days and give an update on what some of the preliminary data is. And at that point, we'll also have feedback from park staff to see if they're sensing some relief from some of the, hotspot issues.
That'd be great.
Awesome.
Please do.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
I'd like to see a study of how many people in city leadership started as lifeguards. I think it's pretty high.
That is where I met my wife, so it is the best thing.
That's awesome.
And our oldest son did work as a lifeguard.
Yeah, true. Me too.
I told Chad he still works for me, so.
That's the park boys.
That's it. That's it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for having
Thank
me.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right. Item number 5, water fountain report. I heard somebody say it was there. Molly Wick, so go ahead.
Good afternoon. I am Chris Mell. I am the irrigation supervisor for Parks and Rec. I've been in the position for about 4 months now. I've been in this department for over 4 years working in this irrigation department. Currently, we have well over 300 active drinking fountains in the parks. My staff is responsible for drinking fountains and irrigation for the parks. So we have a limited number of staff members to work on drinking fountains. About a month ago, I did start an inventory and going through the parks. Based on what I have seen from the drinking fountains of my years of work here, I knew when I started that we needed help with our drinking fountains because it is a major complaint that we get a lot from the public. So I felt I needed to get out, start looking at these. I've been driving, going to the parks, checking the drinking fountains, seeing what status we're at. And I can tell you that we're below a fair average. We need to get a lot better than where we're at right now. But what we deal with these drinking fountains is we have plumbing issues that are not compliant to the current plumbing codes. We have the age of the fountain. They're deteriorating. They're falling apart. The parts are not available for the older drinking fountains. So we have to kind of think out of the box. Can we fix it or, you know, change it out, do things like that. We have drainage issues. You would think with the drain of a drinking fountain, it wouldn't be a major problem because it's just, you know, if you're not drinking it, it's just going down. But when the drainage issue doesn't drain into the ground as it's supposed to, it'll drain out the bottom of the drinking fountain. That gives us a call that there's a leak. It's not a leak. It's just a drain issue. But then we get the calls that your drinking fountain is leaking. If kids sit there and hold the button in and then water's all around it, then we get an emergency that you've got a break and then I'm sending somebody out because there's a break and it's just a drain issue. So there are older drain systems that use piping. The newer drinking fountains we put in now do not use pipes. They are trough fed. So there is no internal piping for drainage. It just drains into basically a floor drain that goes into a pit full of gravel and it just evaporates into the ground. So less root problems and things like that. So as we evolve, we're getting better with the drainage on the system. But on the older ones, we have to try to convert those to a new drain system. We deal with vandalism with the drinking fountain. You can go out and fix a drinking fountain. The next day I get a call, it's broke already. Most of them occur in parks that are not heavily populated. They're, you know, isolated. We just recently had one broken with a baseball bat that we just fixed and put together with new parts, so we had to go out and fix that. We also have the problem of parts not available. Some of these drinking fountains are sold. They don't have the parts available anymore. So I've taken it in. So I started going through the inventory. I'm going to continue to go through the inventory. That is how I'm going to build up a report so we can come up with a plan of what we can do with these drinking fountains to get them above fair and more and accessible to the public. We have newer fountains that have been put into the parks last year and the year before. We have some more going in the next few months. New drinking fountains. We've changed the brand we're using. Like I said, it's the trough drain, so there's less expensive parts to use, easier drainage. We are adding pet attachments so dogs and pets can drink from the bottom. So they're the much nicer drinking fountains. But as we work through the current inventory we have things we need to do. There's going to be a considerable amount of drinking fountains removed from parks. It's just a plumbing issue that they were plumbed back in the day with galvanized piping. You can't have the galvanized piping for drinking water. So these are just drinking fountains that as we see them, if they're broke, we're not fixing them. We're capping them until we have the time to remove them. Removal, because they're concrete type, it takes a lot of work to get it done. But, you know, once they're gone, we don't have the complaints because there's no drinking fountain there. We're starting the new installations with contractors. We have some ARPA funding that we're using that's going to put some new, I'd say I think about 25 new drinking fountains on the west side are going to go in. So we've got that. We're working on it. We came up with a new plan to refurbish some of our drinking fountains that we have. We have push button problems with. The push button on these drinking fountains constantly freeze and break. We get the slightest freeze and they're gone. And they're very expensive buttons, but we've converted it to a new style that there's no push button. They don't freeze. We have internal piping that is more susceptible to the weather, so it's not going to break down. So it will relax the fact. Usually when we get to see the first freeze coming, we think, oh, yeah, go out and shut these off. Well, when you shut them off, you forget to go turn them back on, or you just don't have the time to go turn them back on. With this new style we're going with, don't have to turn them off anymore. They can stay on during the winter. We're painting them. We're cleaning up the drinking fountains and painting them as needed so they look like you want to get a drink from it. Some of the drinking fountains, you don't want to get a drink from it. Most of the time, if we see a drinking fountain with birds hanging around the top, we know it's broke. Because it's holding water. So we're going to continue working on the – and as we work, there's – some instances, we just can't fix drink fountains. They have to be removed. A case in point, two cases, Kennedy Lake is surrounded by concrete fountains, just the little bubbler coming out of a piece of concrete. All of those were eliminated. We had to put in a new water line in Kennedy Park. So when we did that, we didn't cost out to be feeding all these individual, I think it's like 20 individual little fountains. So we didn't attach them to the water line, so they have no water. But we did put places in the park for new drinking fountains once funding comes available. Put them in. We also have new fountains going in where the dog park's going. So that Kennedy Lake, here within the next year or so, will have a full amount of drinking fountains. I know it was brought to attention Catalina High School. That is a drinking fountain we just can't do anything with. It has a contamination problem. First of all, the water connection for that drinking fountain is Catalina High School. We don't have control of it anymore. It is connected after a backflow device. The backflow supplies water to the school. With the drinking fountain attached to that with no backflow containment for the drinking fountain itself, that brings up cross-contamination factors. If anything happens to the line feeding, there's three drinking fountains on the line. Only one is ours. That's by the playground. There's two in the ball field. If anything happens to those lines, break or whatever, because of the way the suction faction works with pipes, it will take that contaminated soil or whatever into the line, deliver it. It won't go into the Tucson water system because there's a backflow, so it'll find its next exit, which will be the school. So there's no way to stop it. If the school has a problem, something breaks in their line, same thing. Find the next exit, which would be those drinking fountains. And it would never be known. You'd never know it. So unfortunate for that one, we just have to take out of the system and remove it. So that's, like I said, within the next few months, I can have more of a data of what we're looking at, how we're going to attack it, because without a real plan, we're just fighting over ourselves. We still maintain, but the majority of the work that we do with the drinking fountains is in the off season when we're not dealing with irrigation. Because right now our irrigation systems are ramping up. So that's where my staff is pretty much tied up. We try to spend one day a week working on drinking fountains. We call it Drinking Fountain Friday. But as it goes in irrigation, sometimes that doesn't happen. Things, you know, main lines of the system we have to fix. We just don't have the time to give up that Friday to get it done. So within a few months, I'll be able to report to John and Lara what I'm seeing, what we need to do, and where we need to go. And it's my hope that within the next few, when the next years, we can start looking toward our budget and trying to put some drinking fountains in the budget and get them more out there to switch out our inventory, to get it newer, so that it's, we have better usage of the drinking fountains. What we look for now is where the high usage drinking fountains are, we're taking care of those and making sure those are there.
Questions, ladies?
Yeah. How many work orders right now do you have to fix them, and can we add to your list? I know, where's the water?
I think currently, I was just looking at our task before I came to this meeting. The work orders or tasks that we have, I think we're at about 38 right now. But some of those are old ones that we need to just check out to see if they are.
And your backflows? One time I saw a guy working on the backflows, and he said he's the only one in the city that's doing it. Do you only have one guy?
I have a contractor we contract out that. So I have one company, which soon hopefully will move up to two companies. But if we have any troubles with backflows, I contact them, and they are to take care of it. If they can't fix it, I issue a work order so they can replace it.
Okay.
Our biggest problem with backflows is they're stealing them.
Chief. Did I hear you say they're stealing them?
Yes. The 2-inch backflow that we use, I just found out, has a going rate of $60.
Yeah.
Wow.
Metal theft is high again right now. So it's whenever recycled metals are high, copper specifically, we see air conditioners and backflow devices and any copper and plumbing devices being stolen.
Wow.
This is in broad daylight. We had one at this Mansfield try to be stolen.
Catalytic converters broad daylight as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Do you have any other questions, Becky?
I did have one, but now I forgot because that other thing happened. Okay. Can we have your email?
I'm sure that could be provided.
Thank you.
I have two questions. Number one, is there a list, and I'm not talking about Catalina High School because I do understand that situation. Is there a list of problems that have been in the system for a great amount of time that have not been taken care of one way or another? And if not, is there some way for you to go through and track that so that we get the things that have been sitting on the list for years taken care of first, if that's really a problem? And the second thing is, before I forget, you mentioned the backlog of what you already have in stock as far as parts and things like that. I hope you're not installing anything that is where parts are no longer available. So in other words, you install something, it breaks, you can't fix it because you can't put a part in, you can't get the parts. So that's two different questions, and do either of them make sense?
The first question, yes, they both did. Thank you. The first question is, as for the, we had have, I think it was about 4 years, 3 or 4 years ago, the past supervisor had one person that was on light duty go out and check all drinking fountains, and he created tasks like crazy. So those were still in the system. Some are still sitting there. That is why, as I'm going through the inventory right now, I'm addressing those concerns. I'm going back because we don't know if they were fixed and not taken out of the task, whether they were cleared. Are they still there? Is that drinking fountain even still there? Is it even repairable? So I am spending the time going through over 300 drinking fountains, driving, getting out, walking parks, going through, and checking and seeing if this is something we need to do, fix, repair, replace, remove, whatever, get a new. As I go through my list, I'm also making notes. This is a potential area for a new one. So as we progress into the system where we have funding, it will be easy for me just to say, put it there, put it there. There's no guessing game of where we're putting it. Just, it's already figured this is where we need it. So I look for areas around parks when I'm walking the park. If we're going to be removing this one, this one, this one, this one, what does this area look like drinking fountain-wise now? Is it blank? Is there nothing here? How far are people going to get to a drinking fountain now? And then I have to assess, what kind of drinking fountain do I want to come here? And we're leaning more toward just bottle fillers now instead of drinking fountains. Because a lot of people are just carrying bottles. Okay. They're not wanting to drink out of the fountain. And we don't need to be ADA compliant for it. It's just it could just go on a little small pad and small drain and be done.
Okay.
Your second question, no, we are not fixed. If it can't be fixed with parts we can't get, it doesn't get fixed. What we're fixing it into is parts that are readily available. They're regular mouthpiece drinking fountains. And the tubing is braided tubing. So all those parts are readily available. So we're able to fix them up and do what we need to do.
And is there any kind of a system that prioritizes drinking fountains in parks that don't have any others or don't have any working ones where those get fixed before the ones in the parks where there's 10 drinking fountains and 8 of them work?
Currently what I do is, as the tasks come in, as the calls come in, we immediately check those out. It's not something we just put on the back burner and say we're not going to do it. If a call comes in, I create the task. I look at the situation to see what that drinking fountain is. If I have drinking, let's say there's 3 drinking fountains in the park and 2 of them are working, this one broke, that's going to not be right, done right away. If it's 1 drinking fountain in the park and we can get it fixed, it's going to be put on that task list. It may not get done that week, but it may get done the next week. It just, as you get into our season, which is pretty much starts now until September, we have to, see what we can do. And a lot of times the guys are busy working on irrigation systems. That's me. I go out and fix them. I was just out yesterday, fixed 2 of them. So the prioritize is looking at what's in the park, what's available still, and is it fixable, and how long will it take? If it's a drain problem, I've had a couple of instances where I keep getting a call for a drinking fountain that is leaking, and I went out there finally. It was at a school on a playground, and I was able to talk to the people that have been calling. I explained to them that this is a drainage issue. We don't get calls anymore. So, but it's still an issue we have to address, but just not something that's on the top of the board.
Ladies, any other questions?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Becky.
So this is Little League season. Everybody's in the parks. Are those your priorities then, to fix those while
you would think, there? But hey, our bottles, they love their bottle. They bring their bottles. We don't get that many complaints for the drinking fountains around the fields. Case in point, Lincoln 5-8, the softball fields, all 4 of those drinking fountains are off. There's 4 drinking fountains around the park, but those are the push button ones that we have troubles with that need constantly leak. And we don't get any calls from there because they go concession stand by water. Or they bring your bottles. That's the way it's leaning now, is it's more bottles than drinking fountains.
What he shared with me is that the biggest complaint comes from the dog parks. Right?
Yes, the dog parks is the biggest one.
Yeah.
And that's where in the future I would lean toward dog parks not having the human part of the drinking fountain. We only need the dog park. They make a fountain just for dogs.
Okay. Understand, you child.
They just don't use it. It's literally, we can fix them. I know one park that we fixed the dog drinking part, but could not fix the upper. We never got a call. No complaints from it at all because the dog was working. That's all they really care in is dog parks. But we do know which dog parks we have trouble with.
I mean, I've seen a Great Dane use a human one.
Well, you can't go back.
Chris, thank you for taking the hot seat for this afternoon and giving us the information because I've been wondering for 6 years why Catalina High School playground hasn't had any water, and now I know, and it makes sense.
And so, that's how we address things. If we hear from the public that something is wrong with something, we will go out and look at it. We may not have the time to repair it or something, but we do make the time to go check on it.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. You may leave the hot seat or whatever you want to do. All right. The next item is reports and announcements from the Parks and Recreation Commissioners. You have anything, Robin?
Yeah.
Go for it.
At our last meeting, the commission supported a motion to have a meeting at Rio Vista Natural Resource Park to get greater input on the master plan and to allow the neighborhood to continue to have input in that process. Mm-hmm. I was hoping it was going to be something that was facilitated for more input, but it was presented in a report format, and Matt gave a wonderful report on what's going on with the master plan. Since we last met, there have been some modifications to the master plan in that, and Scott, correct me if I'm wrong, Greg, that they're all the trails now are primary trails. There are no secondary trails. And they are wider. They're all 6 to 8 feet, which I think the majority of stakeholders believe that's a good thing. There was a trail that was eliminated. It was what was called a secondary trail on the master plan. And there was discussion about the irrigation of the 365 plants that some stakeholders continue to be concerned about. I'm always taken back with how invested and wonderful that community has been to get to the point of where the master plan is as of today. I think it's been a wonderful, we talk about best practices, this kind of master planning I think has been exactly that. It's been a lot of collaboration, a lot of input, and there are still some things that the community is concerned about. I know I'll be meeting with Kevin Dahl next week, and I appreciate his time and commitment to this process. And I think that we're hoping, as in all community projects we talked about at that public meeting, that it's cyclical. It's something, and these processes are never done. They just continue to be addressed by the public, by stakeholders, by anybody that has an interest, including contractors, as issues come up. So, again, I know that there's been letters of appreciation from stakeholders that have been sent to the department, to the city, to the commission, and hopefully that's something that will continue to be the best practice for the city today.
Thank you. Becky, did you have anything to report?
I have several of these.
Okay.
I just want to say, yay, Body Armor Pile groundbreaking, May 3rd, yay, the neighborhood is so ecstatic. They want to buy cookies and juice to present. Are you guys presenting anything, or can they bring their cookies and set up their table?
Sierra, do you know what's planned?
Yes, when I talked to Antonio, he said that you guys can definitely bring the cookies and juice, and we'll provide water and anything else that you guys would like us to bring.
Okay. They called me, and so I said, I'll look into that. So, and then
they make cookies. It can't be homemade cookies.
They will probably be. One of the leaders is a Girl Scout leader, but I don't know if she's bringing a Girl Scout cookies. So I don't know. Like, I don't know. Okay, they won't be homemade. I'm having a bike rodeo in the neighborhood Saturday, April 27th. We're starting at Apollo Middle School, and the event will start from 9 to 12. The kids will ride with community leaders, TPD, the Mean Streets Alliance, everybody that I could get is going to ride with the kids down Liberty to the Peace Garden. Meet the Mandalorian, Boba Fett, have some snacks and cookies, and not made cookies because I don't bake, okay? So they'll be homemade. I'm not homemade. And so they'll have their snacks, and then they'll continue riding down the bike path, down 6th Avenue, back up to the newly paved 6th Avenue, and then over to Oregon, back up Missiondale, back to the school for pizza and EGs. And so that'll be fun for the kids, I hope, and hoping for a beautiful day. So if anybody wants to ride a bike with the kids, you're all welcome. And then Billy Lane Lockford School, middle school students. Oh, my gosh, these kids are wonderful. They have been working on a project, Community Share, with Irene Ogata and a lot of other agencies, Tucson Water and all these people. They have been comparing two parks, Thomas J. and Randy Fenton Park. And so the kids went to study both parks, looked for and comparing them, south side, north side, and all the things in the PowerPoint presentations. And 14 students submitted their projects. And at the U of A tomorrow, the top five will get awards at the U of A. But I wanted to be able to share with you all their findings. I mean, it's amazing what these kids have done. Yeah. So.
Are you sure?
And they had broken water fountains over their stick. Thomas J., it's just FYI.
That's interesting.
Wow. Yeah.
They have their problems too.
Right. They are Pima County parks because Randy Fenton and Thomas J.
Right.
Yeah. So they're not city, but the findings and the work they did was truly amazing for middle school students. And so I was happy to be part of their comparing and their tours, and everything that they did was amazing. So bright futures ahead for our students.
I love that, Becky. Very good.
They're really good. Thank you. That's all I have.
That's it? Okay. I only have one thing, and that is that I'm leaving town on the 4th. You're aware that I'm not going to be here for the next few months, but right. I will be up there. And please run the meetings, because to do it from someplace else, I found that the old system is impossible. I have no idea with the new system, but I'm going to guess it's not going to be a whole lot easier.
Oh, but she got a new toy.
I know.
Diane. Mr. Poe?
Anyway, that's the only thing I have.
Mr. Poe?
Yes.
I'd like to share that it's far, far better. I don't know if Sierra wants to chime in or Diana, but I can hear you all very clear and far better than the old system. So maybe it will work.
Maybe. We'll try it and see. We'll see what happens. All right. Very good. Do you have any other staff that wants to report on anything?
I'll do the capital update. So yesterday we went to Rio Nuevo. We have the Cushing Streetscape Park in design right now, and they contributed another $200,000 to it. So that brings us to about $1.1 million. We're trying to get to $1.5 at a minimum. More like $1.8 is better, so we're getting close. So that was good news. Kennedy Ball Fields started construction this week, so that project is now moving along. Columbus Park Phase 1 is already well under construction. The lighting of the two existing Little League fields that were up there is done. Those light fields are now being used. So that's a help to the youth leagues that are looking for additional fields. The new fields that we're putting in are in progress. Anticipate construction wrapping up in this fall. Port Lowell Bath House and Splash Pad are both moving on. I think the pool is good for opening in June. The Splash Pad is more likely going to be July. Freedom Park and Jesse Owens Splash Pad are still scheduled to open up in June of this year. Lincoln Dog Park and Playground has a ribbon cutting scheduled in May. Well, will be happening in May. I don't think that's scheduled yet. But those will be opening soon. We're getting really close on both those. This is going to be the biggest dog park we've opened so far. It's almost 6 acres. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be, it's got playground toys for dogs, I guess is how you describe it.
Agility course.
Yeah. I think a playground for dogs. But... First pull me in, it's going to be kind of cool. Okay. We already have kids using it, so that's not good. Have to keep kids off so the dogs can use it. A new park we are working on at Los Reales Landfill. We have a community meeting tonight, 6 to 7 at Littletown Community Center. So we're starting to push the survey out to see if the community wants in that new park. El Pueblo Park, there's a special event this Saturday, which we will also be pushing out our survey for improvements at that park. And the special event is 10 to 1. It's El Dia de la Niñez. Did I get that close, Jasmine?
Good job, yeah.
Becky, I got it right. And then she already talked about groundbreaking for Barrio Nepal. It's been a long time coming. We're excited to get rolling on May 3rd. So, week from Friday. That's it. 4-3.
Thank you, Greg.
You should have gotten an invite to the groundbreaking.
Should.
Yeah.
Cool.
Anybody else?
On the maintenance side. Things that weren't included in the report are we did the rose garden planting at the end of March, beginning of April. So Lara was able to help get around 130 new roses installed with a volunteer group. The staff are working on doing all the mulching for all of those beds, and then we're planning for next year on how we're going to put in even more. And then upcoming, we're starting our aerification program, so we're going to have various fields closing intermittently throughout the city. So we can start getting those aerified and softened up for all the user groups. But focusing primarily on maintenance right now, which has been nice.
Thank you, John. Any others before we turn? I heard a yeah.
Mr. Polo up here. It's Donnie.
Oh, I'm sorry. Donnie, go ahead.
Hi, how's everybody?
Hi.
Okay, let me see if my camera's working. Okay, here I am. Just a couple of recap things. We did have our Battle of the Bands last month, and that turned out really nice. And we actually had, I didn't realize this, but the organizer, Michael, one of our special event staff, said the winner of the event this year was actually a participant last year that didn't win. So they took a whole year to get better, and then they ended up winning the whole thing this year, which was pretty cool. We're still working along with our open houses. So if you see an open house in your area, get down there and check it out. Staff are working hard on trying to add, some things to make it super special. I went out to Donna Liggins last month, and they've built this relationship with the librarian down in Green Valley. And what she did was she sent, a bunch of books down that the kids could take, with them. But only from Black authors because of Donna Liggins and its location. And then any local authors that they've had, she donated all the books so the kids could take them. They were all brand new. And then she also put together a bunch of STEM projects. So everything you need for the project in a Ziploc bag, all of the supplies that you would need, and then the kids were able to take all of those. So in my own house, we've been experiencing a harmonica with two popsicle sticks, a piece of paper, and two rubber bands for the last 2 weeks. So that's been pretty cool. And then we did have our Power Wheels event at Ori. It was really, really cute. The pictures were really nice. I think people in our community were really they really liked that event. It was very family-oriented. It got a little cutthroat out on the course, but other than that, I mean, it was really, really nice, and I think it's one of those events that's going to be sticking around for a little bit. And then we're going to start slowing down, so you're not going to hear such a lot of reports from the rec side because we're starting to get ready for summer, and, you know, that's super crazy. And so ordering and just orienting people and all of those good things. So all of that's coming. And then you'll get it in our following report, but we have a big Cinco de Mayo celebration on the 3rd of May. Dean keeps asking why. Oh, I'll get to Dean in a second. Why we're celebrating Cinco de Mayo on the 3rd, but it is what it is. Down at Armory Center, and all of our senior groups are coming over to celebrate together, and so it's going to be super exciting. Okay, so that's the recreation report. I don't know if you guys see a stranger in the room, and I don't know if he's had a chance to introduce himself, but we do have a new recreation superintendent on staff, all the way from Chicago. Dean has been with us for 6 months. Dean, I don't know if you want to introduce yourself.
I was just fine not being seen or heard. Hi,
too
I'm Dean.
Bad.
Yes, I am from Chicago.
And
happy to be here.
And his dream was to live in Tucson or Arizona.
My dream was to live in Arizona.
Right.
Where it's hot and dry.
Finally made it.
And I made it. All so right. My dream fulfilled.
There we go. Thank you, Donnie.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Anyone else before Laura?
I don't know. TJ, are you doing any updates on aquatics or no?
I can if you'd like.
Sure.
So we're looking to open all 20 pools again, probably in a various fashion or forms. I have significantly added a fair amount of swimming lessons. And we actually changed the swimming lessons to offer more like stroke lessons instead of just like water safety lessons and star baby lessons. We are into our last class for lifeguarding starts this week. It starts on Sunday. And we're going to be probably very fully staffed, which I'm excited about. We also have trained at this point probably 40 people to teach swimming lessons on top of the ones that we already had certified. And we want to train another 20 more. And it's just keeping up with that has been quite a bit, but I'm looking forward to hopefully another successful summer.
And that's such a wonderful report compared to what we heard 2 years ago.
It's been like drinking water from a fire hose. But and if Keith, if you want a job, I can get you a job and put you back in a chair.
I'd like to present in front of council, so I might need one now.
It does remind me that we did have an ELT challenge between the chief and the IT director, both former lifeguards, both swimmers, to see who.
Big beater brick con?
Yeah. So that's.
Was that like me doing a belly flop for the lifeguards last summer?
Yeah. We'll do a challenge.
I'm in.
Great. Laura?
So just a few things. On Saturday, we did the official groundbreaking ceremonies for Pathway to Asia for the zoo. So that's why now you see over here we have the fencing up. There's additional fencing all around the perimeter. And so that is approximately a 2-year project where at the end we'll be welcoming red pandas and tigers and Komodo dragons and bats and all sorts of other cool animals. So really excited to see that's moving forward. I know last meeting I updated you all on, you know, we knew that Steve Kozacik had stepped down from Ward 6. So tomorrow at mayor and council meeting, they'll be discussing what the next step processes are going to be. There were 12 candidates, one withdrew, so now it's 11 candidates that have submitted interest. And so tomorrow's meeting, they'll be discussing what their next steps will be in terms of evaluating and getting to a selection. Tentatively, I've heard May 6th, potentially for a meeting, just to address that. And then one of the things that Donnie didn't mention, which I think is just super cool, we were selected to host the vice president of the United States to come and do one of her in-person events. So that actually happened over at El Rio. So just really a nice experience for the staff to kind of see the behind the scenes of how a federal visit would work, right? So that was really neat, but a privilege to be able to allow a facility to be part of a showcase like that. So that was pretty neat. And Donnie got to learn all the Secret Service stock.
Cool.
That was it for me.
All right.
That's why Air Force 2 was at the airport.
Right.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Last thing here is the commission future agenda items and the next meeting date. Obviously, the next meeting date is listed here as May 22nd, which is the fourth Wednesday of the month. Do we have any future agenda items to place on that agenda?
So I might have a conflict on May 22nd, because that's graduations for the high schools,
uh-huh.
And I might be there.
Okay.
And not here.
So
I'm going to try to talk my son into not using me to babysit that day so that I can be on the screen. But I'll deal with that.
But June and July, I'll be here. But May is hard for me because of the graduation. Sorry.
Okay. Did you have anything else that you wanted to put on the agenda, though?
No, because I won't be here this week.
Okay. Robin, did you have anything you want to put on the agenda? No? Okay. Well, then.
We'll play it by ear.
Yeah. All right. Very good.
Welcome to adjourn.
It's been moved that we adjourn. Any other? Been moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Got it. We're adjourned.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ray, can I send you some pictures from last week?
I didn't realize things started.